I feel like I'm
Richmond
always...
is for lovers and racers. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Daniel McFadden, general assignment reporter for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And with me, as always, to talk NASCAR is Jared Haas. Jared, say hi, Jared.
Well, welcome. And let's clarify, too, the Wikipedia official thing.
That's from two weeks ago.
Well, we still need to clarify the air. Okay. I did some reporting on that, and I was cited as a source, so... We at least put that to bed, but we are back after some action at Richmond Raceway. We had the NASCAR Cup Series, had Kyle Larson claiming his first win of the season, and Hendrick is piling up the wins now.
One lap to go, sponsored by Credit One Bank.
Just in the pre-race, we were talking about Kyle, man, being a little bit underrated this year, whatever, maybe overrated. And I'm telling you, this win puts him right back where he wants to be. Had some tough finishes, back on top.
First win of the season for Kyle Larson. 1.5 seconds ahead of teammate Josh Berry.
Yep, we are 7 races into the season, and Kyle Larson, the 2021 NASCAR Cup champion, did get his first win of the year at Richmond and his second career at Richmond. Larson now has 20 career wins, 3 on short tracks. On Sunday, he led 4 times for 93 laps, including the final 25 laps. Jared, I liked this race at Richmond, and I liked last fall's fault race at Richmond. Last spring's Richmond race? Eh. But the last two have been really good. Is Richmond back?
I don't know why. I'm not a fan of it. I don't know why. I would think that this is like bucking the trend for me because I like tire track, you know, strategy playing effect. We saw that with Josh Berry and, you know, Front Row Motorsports claiming the, you know, having good track position on that. But I wasn't really that impressed. It seemed like the middle races were kind of strung out. I mean, you had your points of obviously Denny Hamlin come back in the stage, but it's weird to see a short track like Richmond be such a tire race. I think it just throws me off, and I think that's how some fans feel about Atlanta, but that's how I feel about Richmond. It just throws me off. But for me,
I tweeted this before the race. For when it comes to the highlight reel for Richmond,
yeah,
especially the ones they show right before the race on the broadcast. Most of the highlights are from a decade ago or more. It's the same thing that was wrong with Atlanta. It's like up until the reconfiguration, the track didn't have any highlights really from the last 10 years. And I wouldn't say that there's highlight reel moments in this race, but it was, I liked watching it. It visually, it looked like there was stuff going on the track all the time. It felt like the action track, especially when you would get into lap traffic. There's really, really good battles for the lead up at the front. We had there was 11 different leaders in the race, but there was 8 who led multiple laps. So William Byron led the most with 117, Larson with 93. Denny Hamlin had 71, but of course he had two different penalties.
Yeah,
right.
Well, he had one at the start of the race, then he had a bad pit stop, speed penalty. I mean, he looked like he was going to be the dominant car, and I actually had him as a pick to win, but he just choked it away, had a bad pit stop, was 10th, was mired back there, and just never really recovered.
Yeah, and Martin Truex Jr., he led 56 laps. It looked like the Toyotas had the cars to potentially beat, but they weren't there at the end.
Well, Truex didn't have the tires at the end, and he was going off on his crew chief at the radio. They didn't apparently communicate to Truex that they were putting scuffs on his tires, and he's wondering, why the heck am I falling back here, free-falling like Tom Petty? And apparently they put on scuffs because they already used all their tires, the fresh tires. You want fresh tires as much as you can, but with NASCAR putting tire limits, that you have to use scuffs. They had about like 6 laps on them, I think, but That's just that makes the difference between finishing first and finishing 11th.
But yeah, I was not bored with this race. It was for the most part there were some lulls, obviously. But we had I think this race had like its most cautions in years. We had 8 for 54 laps, but that includes, you know, one competition caution and 2 stage breaks.
Yeah.
So you had five accidents for cause, including the last one, which led to some drama. But before we get to that, let's look at the top 10 running order. So Kyle Larson won, followed by Josh Berry, Ross Chastain, Christopher Bell, Kevin Harvick in 5th, Michael McDowell in 6th, Joey Logano in 7th, Alex Bowman in 8th, Ty Gibbs in 9th, and Brad Keselowski in 10th. So this final caution that set up the final run to the finish with Larson winning over Josh Berry, you had an incident where Christopher Bell gets into the back of, kind of slides up into William Byron, sends William Byron around into the wall. And apparently Kevin Harvick wasn't technically involved in it, but he really wasn't. And then afterwards, Bell had some words for Ross Chastain,
yeah.
Who was in the vicinity of the wreck, but had nothing to do with it. But for some reason, Christopher Bell blamed it on Chastain, calling him a wrecking ball, which left Ross Chastain kind of speechless afterwards. it's not a good time to be Ross Chastain. You get blamed for stuff you didn't even do.
Yeah, I mean, the memes are going wild on social media with Ross Chastain doing thanks, Ross. He's like the scapegoat now, yeah, of racing. You know, it's his fault that I wrecked. You know, there's an aggressive racing. We've talked about respect in the garage area. And I feel like Chastain's kind of been the face of more of the aggressive driving to win. And if he's near that vicinity, you saw it at Atlanta. You know, I believe it was Kevin Harvick when he got loose and spun.
Yeah.
In turn 1 and 2, they blamed Ross, but it wasn't actually Ross. And again, Ross Chastain at Richmond, he was in the facility, but didn't make contact.
Vicinity, yeah. Like, yeah, let's not get it wrong. Ross Chastain has been responsible for a lot over the last year and a half. But yeah, he's become like the poster child.
Yeah.
And he's a magnet. It happens all around him, almost every race, it seems like.
I mean, it's good to at least have storylines on that. I mean, it's a little bit crazy that Chastain's getting blamed for it, but he seems to be the person with the most that's driving those storylines and thinking like, oh, you know what? I got spun. I'm thinking of Ross Chastain. I mean, he's grew up as a hard-nosed racer. I think we've talked about Ross Chastain's rise in our intro episode, but he's proving himself that he's a contender up there, and it's not his fault, but he's, like I said, racing that way that, you know, racing hard and might take a little bit more than he gives, but he finished 3rd this race weekend. And I mean, he did lead some, looks like he led some laps, but he wasn't like the main factor though.
No, but yeah, but whatever he's doing is paying off. Mm-hmm. He's now 2nd in points right now. So, so keep doing what you're doing, Ross. So Hendrick wins. They're now 3 for 3 this year on leading the most laps and winning the race. So Kyle Larson's got a win. William Byron just got 2. But of course, this is Larson's first win after he led like 200 laps at Phoenix. So, but it's been kind of weird for me because people are kind of been saying, oh, like Larson's, oh, he's getting redemption this week. It's like redemption for what? Like he led the most laps, didn't win a race. It happens.
It's just that sealing the deal effect. I think that's why they're thinking of redemption, because when you have dominant cars, when you're leading up front, when you have the expectations, Kyle Larson, after what he did in 2021, not falling off a cliff, but not following up those results that he had with 2021 into 2022, your expectation is to go out and win multiple races in a season for Larson. And I felt like he had that on his back. And to always get your first is usually the easiest.
Yeah, but here's the thing about Larson. What he did in 2021, for him, is a huge anomaly.
Yeah,
in his NASCAR career.
Yeah,
outside of that, he's never strung together seasons with multiple wins. Pretty much, and he had what, two last year? He kind of returned to the mean.
He had three last year.
Okay.
He had four wins in 2017, but I think this is also to Kyle Larson being in much better equipment.
Yeah.
I mean, 2021 was his first season with Hendrick Motorsports. If that's the first season, it's hard to make, you know, he had a little bit of a sophomore slump, but I mean, he's trying to pick up where he left off in 2021.
Yeah. But anyway, let's talk about Josh Berry. I find this amusing, and I might write about this in my my weekly column at frontstretch.com this week. Clint Boyer at one point called Josh Berry a kid, like during the broadcast. And I'm like, Josh is the same age as me.
Yeah.
I'm 32. He's no kid.
No.
He is a grown adult. And but it's so weird because he is, at this point in his career, in his early 30s, just now getting this kind of shot at Cup. I mean, it's because of Chase Elliott's injury, but still. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Gordon said after the race that Josh Berry has a future in Cup, which I don't think he says that lightly.
No.
I think he definitely means that. And we got to see a little bit of that today, though part of that on Sunday was pit strategy stuff, which allowed Josh to restart up front after a caution. And then he stayed there for the last, 25 laps or so.
I think even Dale Jr. said that Josh Berry has a future in the Cup Series, too.
Well, if anyone's going to say it, it's going to be him. They're friends.
So. Well, yeah, he's his driver, too. He said that, I believe, right after when Josh Berry won the Snowball Derby. But he's kind of had that really rough and tugged, like, old-school type of NASCAR driver, because we've come to the young generation where, we expect these drivers to be, like, 21 and be in the Cup Series and be already Xfinity Series championship, kind of like what happened with Ty Gibbs. But Josh Berry's taking the old, route of, excuse me, being, like, 30 and in the Cup Series, making his, debut. He made his Cup Series debut when he was 30. So it's – and that was, like, in the olden days because
– Well, no, go back to the 90s and it was like that. Oh,
yeah.
You're in your –
Jeff Gordon was the face of that movement, but it's weird to see how much he's developed. He's kind of been with the late models with Dale Jr., having those rides in Xfinity, and kind of rising to that occasion. I believe he even won for Michael Annette when he was out and injured at Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So – Josh Berry has the capability to prove to rise to the occasion. It's now looking for those full-time opportunities. We will see. But if Dale Jr. probably goes, if and when he wants to go to Cup Series racing, Josh Berry is probably going to be his number one choice.
You would imagine, but he's got to pony up the money for that charter.
He probably need to start like a GoFundMe page and be funded within like 24 hours. Bring Dale Jr. back to the Cup Series.
I do want to look up, like, when was the last time we had a rookie of the year that was in their 30s?
Ah, that would be a good question, because I think that'd probably be like 90s or 80s. Then James Hilton won rookie of the year,
I have no idea. But I find it funny because a few years ago I was watching an old Cup race from like 96 or 97, like that, and Ken Squire, the camera's on Ricky Craven and Bobby Labonte because they're doing the pace laps together, and Ken Squire says, "We got a youth movement in NASCAR," and he's talking about them. And Ricky Craven and Bobby Labonte were in their early 30s.
Yeah.
So I got a hoot out of that. Moving on, so what kind of grade would you give this Richmond race?
I mean, it was decent. I'd give it like a C+.
C+.
I mean, wasn't wow, but it wasn't too spectacular.
All right. So I would give Richmond a B. Okay. Like I said, they were making passes on the outside.
Yeah.
It
was really funky to see him riding against the wall early in the race.
Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
Yeah.
Like before he had his brake problems, was like really making some hay up there. Like it looked like he might have had a car that could have had a say in the race. But then first pit stop, he has to go back to the garage, unfortunately. But no, I liked it. It's still not my favorite of the short tracks. It's never been. But it put on a solid race, and it did it two races in a row there, so that's got to be good for the for that track going forward.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll see with, like I said, we'll probably get in the news too with the track of how the configuration is of, you know, is this really the future of the track of Richmond? Does it need to be the short track that tire wear is super, uber critical, where Chandler Smith goes a lap down because he didn't change tires in the Xfinity race? That actually happened because I think they had a competition caution and they didn't pit for I think it was like 15 laps. They stayed out on tires and they were so slow that they got lapped, and he never really recovered from that.
I'll take your word for it. I didn't get to watch the Xfinity race because I was busy covering tornado damaged Wynn, Arkansas Saturday.
He has a real life.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, we try to be our best to cover it, but yeah, that was the interesting nugget from the Xfinity series race, that John Hunter and Chandler Smith both went down, but John Hunter Nemechek got the free pass right when the stage ended there. But let's carry on to our next segment.
Before we go, I think we should just make note, like, Michael McDowell finished sixth this year. He also benefited from the same pit strategy that Josh Berry did. Eric Almirola finally finished in the top 15. He finished 13th. So good for him. And I believe Ty Gibbs, he was ninth. I think he has three straight top tens now.
I think he's finished ninth. He's starting to get – that's a little bit of starting to get that rhythm, because from what I saw before the season, he wasn't really finishing, you know, when he was substituting for Kurt Busch. But, yeah, Ty Gibbs, he's finished ninth in three straight races.
That's impressive for a rookie, so good for him. Also, you mentioned Chandler Smith. He finished 17th in his Cup Series debut, which if you can make it to the end of your Cup debut and you don't get mentioned,
yeah,
you're doing good.
You're doing good. And he won his first career Xfinity race that weekend as well.
He did. So congrats, Chandler Smith. So, all right, moving on to the news of the week. All right, so I guess we're going to have to fold in the point standings into this news segment, Jared, because last week, the penalties for Hendrick Motorsports, stemming from their illegal louvers at Phoenix, louvers, was a... Anyway, the National Motorsports Appeals Panel announced their decision in the appeal process for that Hendrick penalty. They ruled that, yes, Hendrick did violate the spirit of the law. They did it. Chad Knaus admitted in interviews, they did it. But the National Motorsports Appeals Panel rescinded all the points penalties that had been levied against Hendrick Motorsports. They kept in place the suspensions against the four crew chiefs, Cliff Daniels, Rudy Fugel, Blake Harris, and Alan Gustafson. I can't pronounce his name. And that penalty will now go through this weekend at Bristol Dirt. But the 100-point penalties against each team and the 10 playoff point penalties against both teams were rescinded. So now, Jared, what are the point standings after seven races?
Well, we'll get into the segment after the new stuff of frying my egg, but we got Alex Bowman here in first, and then Chastain, Bell, William Byron is back up in the top 10 at fourth, Harvick fifth, and then there's Mr. Kyle Larson in sixth. Like I said, remember what we've said week in and week out, points don't matter. It's just all about those wins to get into the playoffs. But Hendrick Motorsports has three drivers back in top of the three of the six spots in the top six.
Yep. And so that brings us to our new segment here on Dropping the Hammer, called You Know What Fries My Eggs with Jared Haas. So Jared, this week, what's frying your eggs?
You know what fries my egg is this appeal process of what happened. Pretty lenient to give Hendrick Motorsports their points back. NASCAR has specifically been saying, no, don't mess with these parts. And Jordan Bianchi has a great article in The Athletic talking to some of these drivers and, you know, actually crew members and NASCAR officials, that this says precedent of, you know what, we can mess a little bit. We still get to keep our points. With this, with after what happened with its announced, basically they've already sent him in their vacation, but they'll still be in, they've already still been in contact with the team itself.
Yeah.
So it's not like they it was the end of the world. They're just sitting at home. They're sitting at the office, you know, back at
their war rooms.
Their war rooms. So not really effect there. I mean, Bristol, and then after this weekend, they're going to be back in the pit box. I mean, you got the points back, but all they really lost was the money. Mm-hmm. And if Justin Haley doesn't get the same treatment, that's some fishy stuff right there with the appeals panel, because he got caught basically with the same penalty,
mm-hmm.
Same part that he got realized. And Justin Haley has 1 point. He is out of the negatives this week. So we're curious to see how the appeal process goes for College Racing. But if College Racing gets a different penalty set than what was with the appeal process gave to Hendrick Motorsports, that's a bonkers. And that really fries my egg this weekend. So,
well, part of the problem with the National Motorsports Appeals Panel is that there's no transparency to it. We don't get like a live stream of it or anything. We don't know what happens in these appeals hearings.
All I know is I want Hendrick, whoever represented Hendrick, as my lawyer.
Yeah. But we get an email the day these appeals take place saying the National Motorsports Appeals Panel today heard and considered an appeal of blank, 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 blank. The penalty, and then, you know, cites what was violated and all that. And upon hearing the testimony, the decisions of the National Motorsports Appeals Panel are, and they rule that the appellants either didn't or did violate the rules set forth in the penalty notice. And then they say whether they're upholding the penalty or altering the penalty. And then it lists who heard it. And in this instance, with the Hendrick Motorsports appeal, it was Mr. Kelly Housby, Dixon Johnson, and Bill Lester, who's a former NASCAR driver. We don't get any comments from these appeal members or anything. That's all what I just listed to you in the email is what we're told.
Yeah.
So when the colleague racing penalty, that will be heard by a different set of appeals members. So, I mean, the outcome could be different.
Yeah.
It could be different.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
And there's no transparency, and I really wish they would.
And they tried to make transparency with, like, don't mess with our parts.
Mm.
And now we're just opening the floodgates of, like, what can we get away? This was basically a $400,000 experiment of Hendrick Motorsports. Can they mess with this part or not? And they got caught. So that's basically more or less a slap in the wrist for R&D purposes.
Yeah. So we'll find out what happens to College Racing. Because, yeah, they had the exact same infraction as Hendrick Motorsports. And if they don't get it overturned, there's going to be a lot of screaming.
We're gonna fry a lot of eggs this weekend. It's going to be like a Waffle House in here.
All right. Okay. All right. That's enough of the news for the week. Moving on to this week's race at Bristol Motor Speedway. On dirt.
On dirt. On oh, dirt. Boy. I'm the consensus of one of our other people. Some people say, I just want a dirt race. If we're going to have a dirt race, let's have it at a dirt track. There's been some kerfuffles in the past 2 years. If we're not having a third race this year that doesn't have kerfuffles, we're in trouble. I mean, the first race at the Cup Series, we had dirt and dust flying up. We had huge visibility issues where, I think, wasn't that the race where they said in the middle of the race they went to single file restarts because of the visibility so bad?
Yeah.
And then last year's was affected by rain, but they could race. They raced in the rain, but there was a big old scoring issue that confused even everyone. So, I mean,
I think like the first year there was a lot of bugs to get fixed.
Yeah.
That was run at the daytime. It's now run at nighttime.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything, but I'm hoping they're able to like clear off if it does rain. I'm hoping they like send out some car to like whip around it a few times and get all that loose mud.
They got to pack it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to get some people to pack it in there. It's a process. It's a lot different process of drying a dirt track compared to drying a paved track. I mean, NASCAR's kind of more or less perfected the air Titan with how efficient it is compared to jet dryers, but it's a whole different animal drying a dirt track.
But no, this is year three of NASCAR holding dirt races at Bristol Motor Speedway after going 50 years, basically, since 1971 without a dirt race. Last year's race, which was won by Kyle Busch after a dramatic last lap encounter between Tyler Reddick and Chase Briscoe fighting for the lead. They made contact and spun, and Kyle Busch squeaked by and got the win. The winner in year one was Joey Logano. Going into year three, are you still excited about Bristol Dirt?
I'm still give or take. Like, you know, I'm not like, oh, yeah, Bristol Dirt, or like, oh, yeah, let's get her the rear of the dirt race. I mean, that's where I made my point earlier. I'm like, if we're going to do a dirt race, do it at, like, Eldora or, like, Knoxville. I mean, Knoxville was pretty wild. But let's have it at a traditional dirt track. I still like to have two Bristol paved races. I mean, shoot, if we're going to do dirt race at Bristol, let's make three races at Bristol.
Yeah, but the spring race had terrible attendance those few years before.
Well, it's the attendance
before the first one. Yeah. But so they had to do something to.
Well, they shifted to a night race before on Easter weekend. That's what they did there. I mean, it does something. We'll see. Like I said, the next year. I mean, last year was the first year of having the night race on Easter. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how the second year is with attendance. I mean, it's a shot in the arm. We'll see how it goes with attendance wise. But I mean, that is the basic end goal of it, is just making sure there are butts in seats.
Yeah. So anyway, Chase Briscoe, who almost won last year's race on Bristol Dirt. He had a media availability today on via Zoom that I took part in. I got to ask him one question, but we got some video clips from that, about four of them. The first one is Chase Briscoe, who drives the number 14 for Stewart Haas Racing. He is a dirt racer. He came up through sprint racing and stuff like that. Well, the Indiana native, today he was asked to compare how a cup car and a truck, which he will also compete in Saturday, he was asked how those drive differently on dirt compared to a traditional sprint car, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely drive totally different. You know, a dirt car, a specifically built dirt car, like a sprint car or late model, you know, that's what it's built to do. That's what it's going to go around the racetrack faster than anything else. That's just what it's meant to do. So, you know, it does everything faster. It reacts better, has way more grip. You know, it's lighter. This does everything way better. And the speeds are obviously way, way higher. So, you know, the cup car and the truck even drive pretty drastically different, I feel like. You know, the cup car does things maybe a little bit better than the truck. The truck is a little bit lazier. You know, with the independent suspension and stuff on the cup car, it seems like you can kind of be a little more aggressive with it. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, compared to, you know, a sprint car, late model, the cup car and even the truck feel kind of slow motion. So I don't feel like, you know, I always say I feel like sometimes having a dirt background can be a disadvantage at these races, just because you drive it so different. The only time I feel like it's a huge advantage to be a dirt guy is early in the race, you know, when the track has a lot of grip, you know, when it's tacky and, you know, when it's more muddy instead of, you know, kind of slick and hard. I feel like that's when the dirt guys can kind of really shine, just because we understand the concept of how to get the car into the corner. You know, it's so opposite for all these non-dirt guys to go into the corner and you know, lift way early and then be wide open. You know, so we just understand how to get the car to turn when it's like that. And then obviously if it comes like it was last year to, you know, running the cushion and running up on the wall and just how you have to run, you know, the car, I feel like having dirt background helps in those situations. But when it's, you know, slick and slow around the middle of the bottom, it's almost a disadvantage, I feel like, to be a dirt guy, because it almost is more of just a really slick, wore out pavement track.
Briscoe was also asked to compare the first 2 years of Cup on Dirt. And here's his answer. He gives year one a D minus. And he said he gave, he says last year was basically as good as you could get. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the first year was, you know, maybe honestly a D minus, right? Like it was really a struggle, you know, and I think NASCAR just truthfully probably didn't know any better. I mean, there's a reason that when we go dirt race, you know, any day of the year, we race at night. You know, a day show is very rare. And anytime you run a day show, it's always dusty. It's always a struggle to see. The racetrack's not very good. And there's just a lot of variables that, you know, from NASCAR side with TV and things, it's hard to run a night race sometimes. So I think, you know, last year's race was about as good as it's going to get, you know, from a racetrack standpoint. I mean, we could run the bottom, you could run the middle, you could run the top. You know, granted, the rain probably helped us quite a bit. So hopefully we've learned something last year from a track preparation standpoint of maybe being able to, you know, go water in between stages or something. I don't know what that is, but I do feel like the rain saved us a little bit last year from a track standpoint. But at the same time, you know, it's hard to give a proper dirt race given the circumstances that we're in with the car, you know, with overheating and the windshield and things like that. It's just, it's hard to put the racetrack how it needs to be because our cars can't handle that. So, you know, if we had it, an opportunity to be able to not get hot and, you know, kick the front end with mud and have the windshield out and things like that, you know, you could see a true proper dirt race and I think it would be better, but obviously our hands are a little bit tied just because of the car and things like that. So I think last year was an A in my standards. I thought the race was really good from a track standpoint, things like that. And
I already discussed the dramatic finish to last year's race, which almost saw Briscoe earn his second career NASCAR Cup win. So Bob Pockris from Fox Sports asked him if he has watched the finish at all this year. And he said, here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched it back this year yet. But I mean, I've definitely watched it back other times. And I think for me, you know, it's one of those things I wish that I could do 100 things different, right? Like I wish I would have caught him earlier so that the one lap, the one opportunity I had to even attempt to pass wasn't the last lap, the last corner. You know, I still think that it's hard to say that I would have done anything different, truthfully. You know, just being in that moment, your adrenaline's, you know, pumped up. You know, I'd ran him down almost a straightaway in 10, 15 laps. So this whole time you just see, you know, him getting closer and closer to me and your adrenaline and anxiety is getting higher and higher as the laps dwindle down. So, you know, being in that position, you know, you're running dirt. I was running the cushion super, super hard and you get in this mindset of your dirt racing. And, you know, if I would have caught him with five to go versus the last lap, last corner, it would have been a little bit easier to probably try some different things. But, you know, at that moment in time, I felt like that was my best opportunity to win the race. And, you know, I went into the corner to slide him and really quickly remember that I was in a car that you cannot throw slide jobs from even half a car length back. And, you know, I did everything I could at the time to try to stay off of him. You know, I think even Tyler was talking about it, how in his interview, he could hear me running wide open, trying to stay off of him. So, you know, for me, looking back on that race, yeah, I wish the ending would have been different, not only for me, but also for Tyler. You know, it obviously worked out for Tyler. He's had four wins since then. But, yeah, I think, you know, it helped. I think the only reason I didn't get a black eye after that race was because it was a dirt guy I did the move to. If that's somebody that isn't Kyle Larson, Ricky Stenhouse, Chris Rebell, or Tyler Reddick in the field, I'm probably getting a black eye after. But all four of them guys understood where that move was coming from. And, you know, even Tyler said he would have done the exact same thing because that's just what you do in those situations when you grow up dirt racing.
And we'll close this out with my question for Chase Briscoe, where I ask him of all the Cup drivers with non-dirt racing backgrounds, I asked him who he was most impressed by, how they've done over the first 2 years. And his answers were Joey Logano and Daniel Suarez. And here's why he chose them. Kind of going off of Jim's question earlier, through 2 years of this, of the Cup drivers with non-dirt backgrounds, who has impressed you the most with what they've been able to accomplish so far in during this whole dirt experience?
Yeah. I mean, Joey Logano, I remember saying literally before we went to Bristol for the first time on dirt that Joey Logano was a guy that I think could go and win just because I feel like his car control is just unbelievable. He's so good at what he does and has really zero dirt experience. You know, Kyle Busch has a little bit of dirt experience, but yeah, Joey would be one that really surprised me. And even last year when it was more of a typical dirt track style, I thought Joey did a really good job. I think he was running third or fourth there at the end. So he's somebody that I've always been just honestly amazed by his talent and ability, but really, you know, surprised me, but at the same time didn't surprise me. But, you know, I would say, you know, even Daniel Suarez has kind of surprised me at how good he's been the last 2 years. You know, that's a guy that I would typically think would struggle when we go to a place like that, and has done a really good job both years and kind of been up front, being able to battle for leading laps and things like that. So I would say Joey would be my easy answer, though.
All right. All right, Jared. So Sunday, Bristol Dirt, year three. Who wins?
I think you mentioned it. There's two drivers that I'm going to watch. First one you've made mention, and Chase Briscoe made mention, is Joey Logano. He's one of the four drivers. I think he's finished in the top 10 in both events. One at the inaugural event on dirt, and then finished third last year. And Logano has proven that he has the adaptability to win on these tracks that kind of more have question marks at him and perform well at that. So I'm looking at Logano. And then, of course, I'm looking at last week's winner, Kyle Larson. Pretty dominant dirt car, dirt racer. I mean, he's...
He hasn't fared well in these cup races yet, though.
Well, he finished fourth last year.
Oh, he did? Okay.
He finished fourth last year. Yeah, the year before, he had issues. I think he won. He was on the pole, but I think he was involved in a wreck. But, I mean, when you get in the hornet's nest, don't be surprised if you get stung. So I'm looking at Logano and Larson as my two drivers to pick. We'll have to see how it shuffles out. I'm leaning more towards Logano, but Larson's a pretty strong driver there as well. So I think it's 5 and 22 barreling down in turn 3 and 4 in the final lap.
Okay. All right. I'm going to take Tyler Reddick.
Not a bad pick.
I think I'm just going to start picking the guys who came in second last year, because I chose Chris Buescher for Richmond, but he didn't do well.
Yeah.
But no, Tyler Reddick, he led 99 laps in this race last year before, you know, Briscoe went bonsai into that turn. And where did he even finish?
He finished second.
Where did Briscoe finish?
Oh, Briscoe, after his accident, yeah, Reddick finished second. Briscoe finished 22nd.
22nd. But no, I think finally a dirt guy is going to get a win here in the Cup Series on dirt. So yeah, I'm going with Tyler Reddick to get win number two of the year. So made our picks? Okay. So I got Reddick, you got Logano. So we'll find out who wins Sunday night, where the race is held at 6 p.m. Central on Fox. Any closing thoughts, Jared?
Well, I mean, we're going to have to bring this up next week after this Bristol Dirt race to unpack everything that happens here. We saw a lot of carnage there, especially like the first year. Some torn up cars. I remember like seeing a picture of like Ryan Blaney's car from 2021, literally like the whole left side missing. So this is going to be a fun one, unique experience to watch, especially if you are a newer NASCAR fan.
So, but I'm looking forward to it. So anyway, thanks again for listening and watching this week's episode of Dropping the Hammer. I'm Daniel McFadden.
This is Jared Haas here.
You can find me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden, or you can email me with questions or any comments, criticisms, at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. And Jared, where can they reach you?
They can find me at Real Jared Haas on Twitter.
All right. Thanks again for listening to Dropping the Hammer. We'll be back next week. Take care.